Order. This is a House Finance Committee meeting. It is Thursday, approximately 1:45 in the afternoon. We have two bills up for consideration today. The first bill we'll take up is House Bill 193, Repay Graduate Education Aid. We have the prime sponsor of the bill, Representative Con Bundy from Anchorage here to testify. We also have Wendy Redmond hooked on via telephone in Anchorage to answer questions.
Motion on the bill, sir?
And then I want some help from you folks on how to make your staff behave.
She won't sit, she won't heal.
Think for yourself, John.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thank you for taking your sunny afternoon to look at the whammy bill. I think most of you are aware of the whammy program. Just very briefly talk about some of the issues. You have my sponsor statement, and I won't go over that in great detail, but just to hit some of the high points. The whammy program is a program that we have in lieu of medical school. Medical schools are very expensive, and so the students that we have in the whammy program are subsidized by the state of Alaska. In the past, we've had whammy students who are not always able to return to Alaska after they finished and have something more than $150,000 of the state's education funds invested in their education, and they haven't returned to the state. Now, you will hear that people are returning at a higher rate, or that the people in the whammy program end up in Alaska. It's my contention that many of these people would end up here because of Alaska. The notion that we are going to run out of doctors if we don't have this highly subsidized program, I think flies in the face of all the qualities that brought many of us to Alaska. That we didn't need to be subsidized to come here and work, and I think we'll have many doctors still here. The university is facing some difficult financial challenges, as many of our state programs. And this is not a bill, and I really want to emphasize that, to beat up on the university or to take money away from the university. It's certainly not a bill to deprive university students of funding. What it does is it allows Alaska to reap the just reward, I would say, of the investment that we make in our whammy students. The people who receive a medical education and return to the state of Alaska to practice their medical skills here for at least 5 years will not be at all impacted by this bill. Those that choose not to return, and certainly it's not a slave state, we don't have to make people return here, then would have a financial obligation to the state of Alaska. Research has shown that majority of physicians end up living where they do their residency. And so there, I think, needs to be some added impetus or encouragement for the doctors that we finance to return to Alaska. And that's why I have proposed this bill. What it does simply is ask that the monies, in addition to normal state funds for education, the resident fees in essence, non-resident fees in essence, that the whammy contributes be a loan that is subject to forgiveness if these medical specialists return to Alaska and practice in Alaska. There are other people here who would like to talk to you about the bill. I would add that there is an amendment that I would appreciate your consideration of, that would include all 4 years of the WAMI program in the forgiveness. The bill as it's currently written only includes the last 3 years of the WAMI program, and as you may well know, the first year is the most expensive year in the program. There are those who have testified that Alaska receives other rewards having this program, and one is that the Alaskan doctors have access to certain WAMI computer files. And this certainly may be a valuable resource, but medicine is a business, and if the doctors have need access to these files, I'm suggesting that they ought to pay for them and not use some of our very scarce educational dollars to subsidize doctors in their practice. I don't think that's the intent of education. With that, I'll close my comments and be available for questions.
Thank you. Representative Martin.
Just speaking on the amendment, so not that I intend to push it at this moment, but it's normally a rule of thumb that you don't put intent or findings in legislation. You put what you want. And in this case here, it seems better to say clearly from the first sentence, a person participating in the educational program will blank, blank, blank. Because if they said, well, that was only intent, then you're flipping back and forth. Legislation should be specific.
Representative Martin, I don't want to debate the wording of an amendment at this time. We want to ask questions on the overall intent of the bill. We do have two other people to testify, and then we'll start debating the wording.
He can think of it well. Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like for debate and for the benefit of people who don't have the details of the legislation, how does this affect, when does this go into effect and who does it affect? If someone's in their second year now and this passes, would they, on their third year of loan, would they be required to fall under this act in the third and fourth year of the loan, or are those that are currently enrolled in WAMI, will it only affect those future enrollees?
Let me ask Wendy Redmond to comment on that as well. And you know, it's such a simple question that I'm going to refer it to my staff.
Yes, Representative, just when you go to enroll.
Okay. We have to have you come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think it is addressed in Section 3 of the bill, but if you want to just clarify that to answer the question, and you need to identify yourself, please.
Lynn Smith, aide to Representative Bundy. Representative Davis, that is, if the new enrollees, those people already in the program, would not be affected by this legislation.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But it looks to me like we will probably need an amendment to change the date in there from 97 to 98, if that's to be the case.
I think that's accurate.
Thank you.
Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bundy, I know that our office has been communicating about the concern that I had and my office had in relation to making this program eligible for only Alaskans. Can you address that issue? You felt that the necessity of an amendment was not required?
Yes, and I certainly, again, will have Ms. Behrens comment on that. But in order to be a member or participate in the WAMI program, you are required currently to be an Alaskan resident. Now, if you wanted to tighten up residency as to make it qualified for permanent fund rather than qualified for driver's license, you only have to be 30 days for a driver's license, but permanent fund is 2 years. And as we speak, magic occurs. A list of all the participants, the hometown, and then the high school they graduated from. And now, not everyone graduated from high school in Alaska, but everyone is hometown is listed as Alaska now.
Out of curiosity, if I could continue briefly, Mr. Chairman, how many of the participants did not graduate from Alaska schools?
Well, I'd have to run a quick count here, but might I say, and it's not my job to defend these students, but as you know, the highly mobile population, particularly in your area of military folks, it may easily be that folks graduated from high school somewhere else, but were truly Alaskan residents. But I'm looking very quickly here. Out of the 40 students, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 out of 40. Interesting to note, two of them are graduated in other countries, not just in other states. But 12 out of 40, assuming that at least a portion of them would have come to Alaska for other than just attending the WAMI program. Again, I'm unless we want to make them super residents, I don't see this as a problem at this point.
If I could continue on, Representative Mr. Chairman, by making them super residents, you are specifically referring to the statutory requirements that we have in place for it to be eligible for the permanent fund dividend?
Or there's no limit, whatever in your wisdom, if we want to say 5 years.
Well, I think there is a problem, though, Mr. Chairman and Representative Bundy, about making it too restrictive because you start running into the equal access and opportunity issues.
Again, I believe we can comfortably say that certainly the vast majority of these people are clearly residents.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there further questions for Representative Bundy? If not, we do have Diane Barron here from the Post-Secondary Education Commission. Diane, did you want to testify or just available for questions? We also have Wendy Redmond with the university online. Wendy, did you have actual testimony for us today or just were available for questions?
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple of comments I'd like to make, if I may.
If you go ahead, please.
Yes, for the record, my name is Wendy Redmond, Vice President for the Statewide University System. I'd like to, first of all, thank Representative Bundy. He's worked with us on this bill over the last several years, and I very much appreciate the efforts that he's gone into to try to accommodate our interests in this bill. One of the biggest interests that I think Representative Bundy and the university shared was that one of the options that we looked at originally and some other states have looked at was to require the students to pay a surcharge. And we really felt that that would, in fact, have a negative impact on lower-income students, of which we have a lot in this program, and that this was a fairer way to deal with it. So I appreciate that aspect. One quick comment before I forget it. We've gone through the Alaskan high school graduates, and of the 12 students who have graduated out of state, 8 of those 12 were going to prep school. So it's not like they were living someplace else. Their parents still lived here, and they were attending prep schools in other states. So just a couple of quick comments. This program really is considered very integral to the health sciences curriculum at UAA, which is a program that is very much growing. We've been able to begin bringing in significant amounts of federal research money directly as a direct result of the faculty who are associated with the WAMI program. The benefits to the university and to the state have been significant. The residency program that Representative Bundy referenced earlier, which really is one of the most significant factors in getting docs to stay in the state, was a direct result of the WAMI program being associated with the University of Alaska in Anchorage. So And that program alone, just in its first year of operation, has brought in over $1 million to the Anchorage economy. So, I'm sorry, $5 million. So it's a significant program and is one of their most popular residencies right now. They have many, many more students than they can actually sign up for it. One of the issues that has been of interest to us, and in fact I was unaware of the interpretation that Representative Bundy mentioned earlier, relative to the first year, we're very much interested in excluding the first year from the payback provision. We really feel that money stays in Alaska, is paid to us as tuition. The students live here, stay here, benefit the state of Alaska. We really feel that it doesn't make that much sense to try to require them to add that onto the payback. The students will be required, if they chose not to come to Alaska, to be paying back close to $60,000 even without the first year. That's in addition to the average debt load right now of the WAMI students. In a recent survey, was close to $80,000 in addition to what they would be paying back on this bill. So that's for docs that are in family practice where they don't make huge amounts of money. That's an incredible debt load. So anything we can do to try to mitigate that, we think, is in our state's best interest. Excuse me, and just one final comment on the return rate. The return rates are, as Representative Bundy said, right now we're running about 49.6% of the actual Alaskan students return to the state. The national average for all medical schools is only 40% of their students that return to their own state. So we're doing much better than that. If we look at all WAMI students, 70% of the a return rate, that is other WAMI docs that come here for rotations and residencies, which we think is important also. So I would, I'm not sure if Representative Bundy put in an amendment to try to clarify the inclusion of the first year, but I would very much support the exclusion of the first year. Thank you very much.
Okay, Wendy. The $80,000 average debt, that's debt that has to be paid regardless of where the student lives. So you said it's $60,000. With the 3 years, it's basically $60,000 is the motivation for them to come back to this state.
That's correct.
So now we've heard testimony that the first year is the most expensive year, but in addition to the debt owed by the student, would it just be an additional $20,000? Or is it, do you follow me? For the fourth year, we add that on?
Actually, what Representative Bundy was referring to is the first year is the most, I'm not sure what he meant by the first year is the most expensive. In terms of the amount of money that the student would be paying back to us, it's actually the least expensive. I think it's $13,000, and then it wraps us up to a high of about $16,900 in the fourth year, in terms of the tuition and so on that they're paying.
Okay, I do see that on the fiscal note here. And Representative Bundy has distributed an amendment. Somebody on the committee would have to move the amendment. Representative Hanley?
I have a couple of questions. Number one is, do we have a lack of doctors in Anchorage? Do you know, Ms. Redmond?
According to a recent survey, we do. I do not have that in front of me, Representative Hanley. It depends on there are, of course, differences in different kinds of specialties.
Sure. The reason I think, is medical the only one we subsidize now as far as graduate programs other than our normal student loan program?
Yes.
And, you know, I for a long time, and we can go into the philosophies, we don't have a graduate school here. You know, the reason some of these have been phased out, in my understanding, is because we haven't, you know, do we need any more lawyers? you know, in Anchorage, some people would argue yes, but I would think not. We have pretty high per capita, although, frankly, in rural Alaska, there is a real need. So, you know, it depends on how you count it. Should we have eliminated it if we're going to do that? There are also federal programs to encourage certain, particularly health professionals, to go into rural Alaska. But so So I guess the question is, what is the overall status or the reason for this particular program again?
I'm just looking at it. I did just find the report, Representative Hanley, and this is looking. This is from the Washington Journal of Medicine, and it's looking at the shortages of primary care physicians. And in Anchorage, they're reflecting a 42.75% shortage in primary care physicians. Statewide, the shortage is showing as 30.95.
It's amazing. That's surprising to me that we have a 42% shortage in Anchorage and only 30% statewide. But I was just asking to get some of the discussion going. I've got a cost breakdown, and maybe I should ask this at post-secondary ed, but maybe you can answer it as well. In their fiscal note, or I don't know if it's a fiscal note, it's the C300 form. It talks about the cost breakdown of 10 second-year students being $417,000. Maybe it's not you that maybe the folks, but I'm just curious how the program works right now so we get a better idea. We're talking about these students paying back anywhere from $13,000 to $16,000 a year, depending on which year it is, and yet it appears the state's cost is substantially more than that. What's the difference?
Representative Hanley, I think I can answer. The difference is that the amount that they're asked to pay back is the difference between the in-state and out-of-state tuition charged at the contracting school. So they're not being asked to pay back the full amount.
So we're still subsidizing the amount of the in-state tuition?
Yes.
We're subsidizing, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Essentially, there is an additional subsidy, and basically what that is a cost for reserving 10 spots at the University of Washington strictly for Alaskan students.
And what is that cost?
Diane will have to tell you. I don't know what the exact number is now for the 4 years of the program.
Representative Davies, and then we'll go to Diane, who didn't want to come up to testify, but is willing.
Can she answer the question?
Actually, Diane, if you want to.
Certainly. For the record, Diane Behrens, Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. I don't have my budget documents in front of me, but globally, the second, third, and fourth year program costs are approximately $1.35 million. And as Ms. Redmond has pointed out, we are paying for the cost of having exclusive rights to those slots in any given year.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, that excludes the first year, which is about $800,000. And now, as I said, there are varying points of view as to the value of the first year. And addressing Representative Hanley's shortage or not a shortage of docs in Anchorage, I think we still have to accept that being a doctor is a profession, it's a business, and supply and demand does affect that business, and if we get short, the supply will increase. Rural Alaska does not have a lot of doctors because there isn't a lot of places for doctors to work in that they don't have hospitals in the smaller villages. Rural Alaska would probably be better served if we take some of this money and put it into a nurse practitioner program where they can work without physician supervision in these small clinics where that wouldn't require a doctor.
Diane.
Chair, if I could just follow up on that, I'd be happy to get a copy of the report that was done and provide it to the committee members. The one point that is made in the report is that the current population of doctors in Alaska are aging, that the average age is over 40 years of age, and doctors do tend to retire at a fairly early age. So one of the concerns is creating and maintaining a pipeline of physicians into the state.
Representative Davies.
I was just going to comment that we also subsidize ordinary students at the university. The student tuition does not cover the entire cost. And as a society, we've concluded that it's useful to have students educated here, and so we provided institution of higher education for that reason. And the state of Washington subsidizes the cost of their students attending medical school by a relatively handsome amount of money as well. So the cost of providing quality medical education is more expensive than the general graduate education. And I think that this additional cost that we're paying reflects that fundamental fact. And no student could afford to pay the entire freight of becoming a doctor.
But I think the point still remains, though, that we're not asking our students to pick up that full cost either.
That's right.
Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know, you know, following along that line, I don't know, you know, what requirement we place on them to stay and work in the state either. There are some conditions, probably some programs do, and some programs probably don't. But, you know, the WAMI program, you know, there's an expense, there's a subsidization that we're providing, and there's some hidden benefits too. Not only, you know, those students that are in the program that come up to Alaska for internships are familiar with Alaska because of the program, because of Alaska students there. There are probably some interns and doctors, WAMI doctors, that are practicing in rural Alaska and other places in Alaska that, because of the program, is why they're here. They may not have heard about it. There's Medivac opportunities and collaboration between all WAMI states. All WAMI states have a lot of rural areas. That's intent of, that's why it's a valuable asset to Washington, other than of course the meds, the students themselves and coming to the university. And then, you know, there are yet other, I think telemedicine is another aspect. There are a lot of things, details, and in medical technology and medical profession that the state is benefiting strictly because of this program. So, you know, it isn't a complete subsidy. There's plenty of benefits, not only economic benefits, but technological benefits and personal benefits that, you know, it's a tough call. We are subsidizing it. It's a subsidization. But it's also, to some degree, an economic development effort, too, because we're benefiting from it. So it's a tough call, and you know, I think those things need to be weighed in the overall decision.
Representative Kelly, did you have a question? Representative Davis, I guess we're still going to have the participation. As far as whether our state has openings, residency openings, I think we're still going to be able to draw students who want to come to the state of Alaska to do the residency. I don't know, maybe somebody has information on the number of residency spots available versus the number of students, you know, whether it's completely in balance or, you know, whether our residency spots would go vacant absent, you know, participation in this program and participation at the current level. I don't know that those positives are necessarily going to be completely done away with if this bill were to pass. Representative Bundy?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, I think it's important to point out that in a time of limited educational dollars, that this is really an attempt to save the WAMI program, because it has been under some serious scrutiny for certainly as long as I've been in the legislature. And by allowing the students the opportunity to have access to the program and then return to Alaska and live for only 5 years, they will still have the subsidy that they currently enjoy. The only impact this will have on those that would not choose to return to Alaska. The purpose of the bill is not to destroy WAMI, but to help Alaska reap the benefits of its investment in these students.
Other questions? Representative Hanley.
Oh, not even a question. I'm going to support the general, we'll deal with the amendments, the bill. I still think often we don't sit back enough, and frankly, we do have limited dollars. I think I would be swayed if somebody came in and said, let's eliminate the WAMI program totally and put the money into a nursing program in one of the universities. I think you could show that it would probably have a much larger benefit overall in the state, particularly for rural Alaska, because that's what's needed more so. But I'm not, I mean, that's why I'm frustrated at this, because I don't think we often, you know, we've got a program, so we're just going to continue it, and we're not going to look at what the possible benefits of doing something different are. And it's going to be difficult to add the money into the university program to expand either health aides or nurses programs and things like that. So that's just a comment on the general bill.
Diane?
Yes, through the chair.
Just a minute. We have Diane first, and then we'll get you, Wendy.
Representative Hanley, there, Ms. Trigg, who may be online, is the community representative to the Anchorage area from the University of Washington. And she may be able to describe a little bit some of the ancillary benefits that the residency program in Anchorage will provide. I think one of the things that the biomedical program at the University of Alaska is supporting is a nurse practitioner. I'm not sure if it's nurse practitioner or physician assistant program, but I think that there is going to be an expansion of the medical education training opportunities as a result of the University of Washington working with us to develop the residency program. So hopefully there's good news on that front.
Thank you. Did you say Ms. Trigg?
Trigg.
I don't believe she's online. Okay. Wendy, did you have a comment?
Actually, this is Suzanne Trigg, and I'm here with Wendy Redmond.
Okay.
Did you have some questions about the physician assistant program?
Well, Diane just made a statement and thought that you might have something to add to it. I'm not sure. Did you hear her statement?
Yeah, I did. And in short, the University of Washington School of Medicine is partnering with the University of Alaska Anchorage to develop a physician assistant program, which will be partly in Alaska and partly at the University of Washington. And as far as I know, will not require any extra state funding for this program. Is that correct? Okay. Anyway, if you would like further comment, I'm here and available to answer questions. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Are there further questions for any of the witnesses? I don't have anybody else signed up to testify on the bill. So with that, I guess we will end the public comment portion and get to the discussion of the bill. I will make an amendment, a motion at this time that the effective date be amended to July 1st of 1998. Representative Bundy.
It's two different places.
Oh, that's right. It's on line 21 and 22. So Representative Bundy, do you have a comment regarding that?
No, basically that's a logical cleanup.
That will be amendment number one. Is there any objection to amendment number one, which will adjust the lines to 1998 on page 3, line 21 and 22? If not, then that adjustment will be made. Further amendments?
Just for purposes of discussion, to introduce Mr. Bundy to amendment number one.
Okay. We'll call that amendment number two.
Number two, yes, sir.
Representative Martin moves amendment number two.
Object.
There is objection.
I didn't move that. I just the purpose of discussion.
I'm not going to move it, then it's not on the table.
I'll move amendment number two.
Okay. Representative Hanley has moved amendment number two. Representative Mulder.
Which one? There's
you are objecting?
I'm objecting, yes. Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Can you find out what this does?
Well, yeah, that'd be the safe thing to do first.
Representative Bundy, do you want to speak to?
If I might speak to the amendment, it basically includes the first year, the $800,000, $80,000 per student subsidy in the equation. Now, the portion the students would be liable for is only $13,000. And if I could briefly speak to the motion. Remember, the purpose of this bill is to encourage people to come back to Alaska and practice medicine. It is to preserve the WAMI program. I think others, we've heard other discussions where, and I can't argue with Representative Hanley, that maybe the state funds would be better used in other portions, but this one's here, and rather than completely change it, maybe we can just fix it a little bit. So it's to encourage people to return. Well, you don't encourage people to return by reducing the financial liability. You encourage them to return by increasing, within reason, the financial liability. This would increase their liability by a total of $13,000, or the calculations that I think Ms. Behrens can speak to, about $150 a month. Now, we're talking about physicians who will be making very likely rather handsome salaries. Hopefully they will. I wish them well. But it's another additional $150 a month is what we're talking about, none of which they will have to pay if they come back to Alaska for a minimum of 5 years. Mm-hmm. Only a portion of which they would have to pay if they come back to here for a portion of those years. Now, it's interesting that we have folks that are opposing this, and I would suggest that the University of Washington are doing the best for their students, but they're also spend enough money to bring representatives from every state in WAMI to their campus every fall and have an interesting seminar, quite an elegant presentation and party, and hire a lobbyist. Now, if this program is short-funded, maybe they need to prioritize their spending, but it's their program. I'll let them take care of it as they will. But let me again state that this amendment will encourage the preservation of WAMI by encouraging people to come back to the state, and even those that choose not to come back, it will give them a liability of an additional $150 a month.
Representative Hanley, you moved the amendment. Did you have a further statement or question?
Not right now.
Okay, then I had Representative Mulder and then Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Bundy's comment jogged my memory. I don't know if it's necessary or not, but I should disclose that I have gone on that trip before down to Seattle to look at the program, and I don't know if that excludes me from being able to vote on it, but I should at least disclose that fact, as I have before. I share Representative Bundy. I support the bill 110%. In fact, I'm very appreciative of Representative Bundy bringing it forward, because I think the medical program is a valuable one, and it gets tedious trying to defend it over the years when you do have students who leave the program in relation to leaving Alaska. And it's been tough to defend that, and I think this bill will go a long way toward providing a financial incentive for them to come here. In relation to this amendment, it strikes me, what Representative Bundy said is actually 100% accurate. You know, we should make a strong disincentive for them to leave and not come back to Alaska. But if you look at it from another perspective and you look at how this program fits as opposed to other programs and other colleges, the way I look at this is, you know, what are there about the 10 students a year that go into the program? And to be in the program, you have to be an Alaskan. So really what this is a scholarship the first year to Alaska College. Just like the University of Wyoming maybe has 10 scholarships for their freshmen to go to the University of Wyoming. I mean, this is, or any other state, this is just 10 students getting a scholarship for 1 year to come to their program. Beyond that, it's going out of state, and I really see that financial tie that Representative Bundy has. But for me, there's a disconnect here between trying to tie the in-state and the out-of-state presence. There really is. Once we start paying for their college out of state, then I really do have a question in terms of their obligation to come back. But once they're staying in state, I really don't see that tie, and that's why I would if we're going to adopt this amendment, perhaps just strike the last sentence of the intent section.
Well, Representative Mulder, the first year, though, we are paying that out-of-state tuition. We're not just paying the tuition to go to UAA. And so I guess that's where, and there was some disagreement when my staff was trying to track that down earlier today, but that's my understanding. We do pay that out-of-state fee.
You're correct.
Even though the person is physically attending the class in Anchorage.
So. That is correct, Mr. Chairman, and that's the difference between, I think an in-state tuition would be something between $2,000 and $3,000, and this out-of-state is $13,000. You're correct. I look at it as a scholar, in-state scholarship.
Representative Davies, then Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I want to make sure I understand this correctly. If there was a number 80,000 that was mentioned earlier, that number a student has to repay in any event. Is did I understand that correctly?
Correct. I think the pro rata share per student is 80,000. Of that, the only portion that the student would be required to pay back would be the difference between the in-state and out-of-state tuition, which according to the information sheet here is the $13,000 figure. So the subsidy, perhaps the highest year of subsidy is the first year, but that doesn't necessarily equate to the amount that the student has to pay.
Mr. Chairman?
Wendy, go ahead.
I think I brought up the $80,000 figure, and in a survey of WAMI students, actually of all medical school students, $80,000 is the student loan debt that students are carrying when they graduate from college for Alaskan students, regardless of...
That's 8 years, right?
It has nothing to do with this particular bill. That's how much debt they're going to owe anyhow. This bill will be adding to that $80,000, a minimum of $58,000 or $74,000 under the four-year scenario on top of the $80,000.
Right. Mr. Chair, that was the point I wanted to raise, is that, I want to also agree with some of the things that Representative Mulder said. You know, I appreciate Representative Bundy bringing the bill forward, and the basic purpose of the bill I support, to encourage the students to come back. But he also said, within reason, and I guess the question is, how big a stick or how big a piece of encouragement do we need to have, and what's reasonable? And my sense is that if you go beyond reason, then it will actually start backfiring on you, and there'll be students that will look at that potential liability out there. I mean, when you're entering school 4 years down the future, or 8 years or whatever it is a long time into the future. It's hard to predict. You know, Alaska's a mobile society. Your parents may move. There may be a death in the family. There's all kinds of reasons why you may choose to relocate at some time in the future. To take the risk that you're going to have to, because one of those factors occurs beyond your control and that you feel that you are constrained to move out of the state at that point, or just to choose to, of course, but to take that risk, there's a risk that when you enter the program that you're saying, I may not be able to come back to the state of Alaska. And so that may be, you know, and you're looking at, on top of an $80,000 debt that you're probably going to end up with anyway, we're now saying, without this amendment, we're saying we're going to add $60,000 to that. There's a potential risk there right now of ending up in the hole for $120,000. That's a good sized mortgage, you know. And then on top of that, now what we're debating about now is whether we're going to add another $13,000 on top of that to make it $133,000 potential liability. And Mr. Chair, I just submit that the $60,000 is a big enough stick already, that we're adding to the 80, and that I would like to just, you know, ameliorate this a little bit so that we don't get the situation where students are looking at this and saying, geez, I can't take that risk. You know, that's a pretty big risk to take, that you might end up you know, owing another 50,000-60,000 on top of what, you know, what might well be 80,000 already. And you think about how long it takes to pay off a $120,000 mortgage. You know, it's a big payment and a long piece of long time. So I'm for that reason I'm speaking against the amendment, but I will support the bill, and I support the intent of the bill.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll get to adjustment of the amendment first, but I feel it's timely to address what Mr. Davies mentioned. You know, for only 5 years of service to Alaska, that is a tremendous pay. They are being paid very, very well. Just to come back and serve Alaska, which we are desperately in need of. If they don't want to get in debt to serve Alaska, then fine, bye. But they can pay off their debt in 5 years. I should go the other way. This is too liberal. This is too lucrative. A giveaway in 5 years? You know, I think we should stretch it to 10 years. It used to be only 50% forgiveness before when we had the residents, Alaskans, to come back. And speaking of residents, it doesn't take much to be a resident. And the word's out for a young person, male, female, who wants to get into our medical program to come here and to go to Fairbanks or to Anchorage for 1 year. They're out-of-state students then. And then they can qualify for in-state students, and they can qualify for this program. And a number of them have done so. Wiping out good, born and bred Alaskans. There's a lot of competition. There's no shortage of people qualified. We have a hard time making Alaskans qualified because of out-of-state people competing with them only because they spent 1 year in Alaska and became a resident. There's just too much of that going on. But the main thing is, for what they get, 5 years of service to Alaska to save 140,000, you and I don't even make that much. I spent 20 years in here and only get $25,000 a year. It should bring tears to your eyes.
Representative Martin, you're obviously not counting your retirement.
Mr. Chairman, you
slipped right in over the wire on one of those fat
years. Mr. Chairman, on the amendment itself, I do believe we should drop out in both lines. 3 and line 1, the intent, because I think it weakens the legislation itself. If this is our purpose, then that should be it. We don't need to say, you do that on budgetary purposes where you're not allowed to do statutory work. But I would like to say that on line 3, we begin a person, the new sentence, and drop out from intent to that. And on line 6, it is also the intent of the legislature that delete that part and start with the repayment provision applied. I'd like to move those at the...
Representative Martin, I'm not sure then what would be left. It would still be intent language, wouldn't it?
Well, what would be left is the new sentence on line 3. It says, a person participating in the medical program.
That would just still be attached to the bill without an insertion into the statute books anywhere. So,
well, my intent is to get rid of the intent.
I think the clean way to do that is just to make a motion to do so.
To do so.
Conceptual amendment.
Conceptual amendment,
well,
if I may.
Exactly. I think what he's trying to do is make sure that instead of just putting participating and making an intent, to make it clear in the statute, if the amendment passes, that they have to pay on all 4 years, not just on 3 years. And I think that I agree with his, if we're going to do this, then we ought to make it in the statute, not just have intent that is very clear, so when somebody reads it, they don't have to go to old intent language. And I think that can be done through a conceptual amendment to whatever statute.
Mr. Chair.
Let's just get a clarification. Wendy, first let's get a clarification from Representative Bundy, having had this amendment drafted by our alleged legal. Did our alleged legal feel like the insertion of the words down on lines 12 and 13 of the amendment would clearly make it so that the person repays the 4 years, or that had to be attached to the intent language somehow?
May I ask that Ms. Behrens weigh in on this. The amendment was drafted to reflect some of her concerns, and my concern is that all 4 years be subject to this bill, all 4 years of the WAMI program be subject to this bill.
If we could, Diane, if you dealt with the drafters, let's discuss what they instructed you as far as whether these two pieces had to go together or not.
Right. Mr. Chairman, the drafter's opinion was that a change to page 2, line 5, which references contracting, if it said contracting or participating, that his interpretation was that whether a student was attending at the University of Alaska or the University of Washington, they would be incurring a debt obligation relative to that year. My concern as the person who is administering the loan was the interpretation of just contracting. And I don't feel that as an administrator, it would be at my discretion as to whether or not that was 3 years or 4 years. And so he just put the intent language in to make it crystal clear whether it was 3 or 4 years.
Wendy, did you have a comment?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. This has got to be part of my myth-busting year, and I can't let this go. I'm going to address it, and it will be just brief. The 82 students that we've tracked from 89 to current who are in this program, of the 12 students that Representative Bundy mentioned that are going out of state, 8 of them are Alaskan students in prep school. 2 of them are military students. I don't know on the other 2 yet. I'm still tracking those down. But the myth that we are taking, that students move here for a year to enter into this program, is simply not true.
Have you got a list of the residents, how length of residency?
Yes, I do, sir.
Yeah, and Wendy, I guess I didn't. Maybe that's things that have taken place in other discussions. I really didn't get that. Okay, Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that was clarifying a comment that Representative Martin made a minute ago. But I have another amendment that was going to clarify this the other way. But if it's the will of the committee to clarify it in this way, which I object to, I would just simply offer that this other amendment that I have slightly changed would make it crystal clear in the direction that you want to do. And what you would have to do is, after the word interest, insert the phrase, and does include costs for the first year of the program delivered at the University of Alaska Anchorage.
I'm sorry, Representative Davies, I wasn't sure what.
If you wanted to make it crystal clear, you would insert after the word interest on line 5, page 2.
The first interest?
The last interest. No, the first interest, excuse me. And does include costs for the first year of the program delivered at the University of Alaska Anchorage. And you get rid of the whole intent issue, and it would make it clear. Having said that, I don't support that, but I just want to help the discussion along.
Your amendment was passed out, and if we should get to that, it would be number 3. But we're on amendment number 2. There's concerns over the way that it is worded, the combination of additional statutory language plus the intent. So, Representative Hanley.
Well, I think Representative Davies' amendment, either modified to say does include or doesn't include, makes it clear either way whether it's 3 or 4 years. And I'm not sure how we modify this one. I would suggest that I will withdraw my motion on amendment number 1. We can go to Representative Davies. I would ask that he should move it. I'll move to amend it. If that passes, we'll go that route. If it doesn't, then it's back to the other one. So
mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'll withdraw number 1.
You're most accommodating. Representative Davies.
I'll move number 3.
Amendment number 3
And I'll move for the discussion that we amend his amendment to delete the words...
Not.
Change but to and.
I guess you could say but does include too.
But does include.
I could just
make it more clear to say and does include.
Okay, we'll make the motion. My amendment to the amendment is that we delete but and insert in its place and delete the word not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is an amendment to amendment number 3.
And that would mean that it does include all the first year as well as the out years.
Okay. Are there questions on amendment to amendment number 1 to amendment number 3? Representative Davies.
Well, I object to that amendment. I won't belabor it. I just remind you of my original arguments about moving from 60,000 to 83,000. I just think that 60,000 is enough of an incentive to get people to come back, and we don't need to add this on top of that. And I just also remind you that first year, remember, that money is being spent in Anchorage at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and so there's an argument there, I think, that there is some benefit of that, whether the student goes out of the state or not, that accrues to the state of Alaska, and so that's the rationale for not including the first year.
Representative Haley.
You object to the amendment to the amendment.
Right, it's the amendment to the amendment that I'm objecting to.
Can Ms. Redmond give me a breakdown or someone of the... Because Representative Davies suggested that the money's being spent in state.
Yeah, if I might, Mr. Chairman.
We've got to be paying some of that money to the University of Washington. I think that's why it's so expensive, because we're paying both for the program in state and to keep a slot open. But
Wendy, can you give us some information on the total, the cost of the first year, the 10 students entering that first year, and the amount of that is paid to the University of Washington versus the amount that goes to UAA?
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Bunny referenced earlier, there's about an $800,000 cost of running the medical school program at UAA that is carried in our budget. In addition to that, all of the tuition, out-of-state tuition that the students pay, comes back to the University of Alaska Anchorage for support of the program. So all of the money stays, for the first year, stays in Alaska for the program. Now, the money that's carried in the Department of Education post-secondary budget, really for the years 2, 3, and 4, is paid to the University of Washington.
Okay, and what does that tuition total up to? Is that just for those 10 students that are attending the classes at UAA? What does that add up to?
I don't have that in front of me, but I believe it's close to a little bit under $10,000 a year, maybe around $9,000.
Per student.
So it's roughly $80,000.
Yes.
So it's 800 plus 80 for the first year is our total cost, what costs at the university, plus the cost of the tuition.
Isn't it 800, which includes the $80,000?
Yes, I believe that's correct, sir.
So the total cost of the WAMI program is roughly the $1.3 million for the second, third, and fourth year, the administration, the clinical units, and $800,000. So we are... So it's roughly $2.2 million, $2.1 million a year for 40 students.
That's correct.
That will take.
And that's $50,000 a year, roughly, a little more.
I've got
that's
here.
That's one way to look at it, yes.
I've got an information sheet here that shows $48,200 per year, per student.
Nice gift.
Okay, are there further questions on the amendment to the amendment? Representative Bundy.
If I could just comment, and I certainly agree that reasonable people can look at this a little differently. When I had an opportunity, as Representative Mulder had, to or the WAMI program at their function in Seattle. I had talked with our students at the time, because at that time we had about a 2% return rate. And I suggested that in order to save the program, we might have to change this to a loan with a payback provision. The majority of the students I talked to said, well, I have access to scholarships at other schools. I would simply go to these other schools and ignore the payback provision. So it's my contention that you need to make payback provision fairly significant if we're going to get people who choose to be in the program to come back. I would point out that research that I've read is that students nationwide graduate with about a $12,000 debt. Now, the information we got said that people who are going to medical school could graduate with, in addition to the WAMI payback, a $45,000 to $80,000 debt. When I look at the comparable salaries between an English teacher and a physician, I think that $12,000 in debt versus the $4,500 plus the WAMI provision that will not be required to be paid back if they come to Alaska is not an excessive burden.
Thank you. Representative Davies, then Hanley, then we'll get to a vote on the amendment.
Well, I think that it has to be pointed out that the salaries, while for certain specialties may be high, the family practice, rural practitioner kinds of salaries are not particularly high, and that this does still represent a very significant debt load relative to those kinds of salaries. And those are the kinds of salaries that the Washington program are the kinds of practitioners that the Washington program is focusing on. It's the nation's leading institution to provide those rural practitioners. And so while it's true that some doctors make huge amounts of money, the very ones that we're talking about in this program are not those doctors. So I think that we have to be careful about the disincentives that we may build into this up front. I think it's fair that, you know, students consider this as they go into it. But I think you have to consider what the decision that a student that's going into this program may be having to make. They're going to have to do this calculus. And I suspect there'll probably be enough students that'll fill the program. But you are going to eliminate some students from the program who just simply can't see their way to take that risk. And so I think that it would be better to put the carrot in there or the stick, depending on how you want to view this, but to not have it quite as large. And that's why I maintain my objection to the amendment. And I do want to, Mr. Chair, add that maybe 4 years ago or something like that, I can't remember exactly when, I did go down attend this program too, just for purposes of disclosure, so that people are aware that I did. I don't think, however, my view is that I think that was a legitimate educational, experience to understand what the program is all about.
Thank you, Representative Hanley.
I still support the amendment to the amendment. I just want to point out, this money will be spent in Anchorage regardless. This amendment won't change that. I mean, it still gets spent there. I mean, that was one of the arguments that was made that maybe we shouldn't, but I think it still gets spent there. It's whether they got to, your argument of it, whether it's too much, is a legitimate one.
Okay. Now look what you've done. Prompted Representative Davis.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I attended the WAMI program too in Seattle, so I kind of exposed that horror story.
Okay.
Clarify.
I didn't.
Just to that, I think it's kind of, I guess it's for the record, but not the horror story. The trip wasn't a horror story. I'm going to clarify that.
Take the roll call vote.
Representative Mulder.
I remember whose motion is out there anymore.
Yes.
Good motion. You're amending it.
No. Mulder is no.
No.
Representative Davies.
No.
Representative Davis.
Yes.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes.
Representative Kelly.
Yes.
Representative Martin.
Yes.
Representative Hanley.
Yes.
Representative Terrio.
Yes.
68, 2 nay.
Okay, that brings the amendment number 3 to us. Is there further discussion on amendment number 3?
Any objection?
Any objection to amendment number three? Okay, without objection, amendment number three is adopted. Are there any further amendments coming before the committee? Okay, maybe just look very quickly at the fiscal note. It's $10,000. Diane, do you want to just talk quickly about the fiscal note?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, we would anticipate tracking these individuals for approximately 23 years after they enter this grant, which may become a loan program. We will need to modify our system. There will be costs of developing forms on a consistent with the other costs of the program. It will be a fairly expensive cost per participant to administer. We'll have to develop contracts, disclosure statements, and basically plan on billing these folks for about 25 years, 23 to 25 years. And so because we operate off of corporation receipts, and this is a non-corporation program, we are asking for some administrative monies to cover the cost of the program.
The amount, $10,000 in the initial year,
started
doing a lot of the programming, and $5,000 in the out years. Representative Hanley?
What did somebody do an estimate? I assume some of these people are going to have to pay this money back, and that isn't shown anywhere. Where that money, does that go into the general fund then? And that, I assume, if just one person is paying back that money, that...
Well, Representative Hanley, I guess that would probably be an asterisk. There's, I don't know if you could, look at the past and give some kind of projection into the future, but any kind of number that you pick is going to be speculative.
Very much so. If the program is a success, the number is zero.
So I guess we could put an asterisk there and have a note to that effect if you think it should go out of committee.
No,
that
I
way.
Just want to make it clear, though, that unless 100% of the people, there will be people paying back roughly $80,000. That works out to a certain amount per year. I forget what was the estimated amount. I mean, it covers the $5,000, I think, and if it doesn't, we've done a good job because we brought all the people back. So I just want to make it clear.
Okay, is there any further action on the bill?
I'm going to motion on the bill, sir.
So Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'd move Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 193 from committee with fiscal notes. And wish it Godspeed.
Is there objection to moving the bill with individual recommendations? If not, then House Bill 193 moves.
So did we save the program?
Next bill that we have up is...
Well, compared to the Senate, yes.
Senate Joint Resolution...
Thank you very much.
Three. We have the prime sponsor here.
Thank you for that. Time comes.
All right, David. You're on your own.
Senator Donnelly is back before us. It seems like we don't go a week.
He's trying to figure out how to get to where he wanted to go.
I like you here, Mr. Chairman.
Wallow around.
Senator, if you want to go ahead and introduce the resolution.
Thank you. Senate Joint Resolution 3 limits the rights of convicted prisoners in the state of Alaska to only those rights required by the United States Constitution. As you know, we have a very new hybrid state constitution, and Alaskans are blessed with a lot of special individual rights and liberties under that constitution that citizens of other states don't necessarily enjoy. Unfortunately, while those rights are completely appropriate for law-abiding citizens, some of those provisions of our state constitution have been utilized by convicted prisoners to claim additional rights under the state constitution they're not entitled to under the federal constitution, thus causing some minor problems currently and potentially significant problems in the future with the administration of our correctional facilities. Some examples that I've provided in the packets before the committee are the discipline and classification process, access to rehabilitation programs, and also the location of incarceration question. All of these questions have stemmed from specific cases and decisions of the Alaska Supreme Court. Additionally, I've referenced the square footage requirement in the Clary settlement and the requirement in this Clary settlement as to the prohibition on dormitory-type cells as another type of potential issue that might be covered by Senate Joint Resolution 3. As we all know, the Clary consent decree is not a statute, and it was not specific in that decree whether it was based on state provisions or federal provisions. It was said it was based on both. So until we adopt a uniform standard for prison administration in this state, it's very difficult to get the courts to tell us just what that specific requirement in that consent decree was based on. But we do know that I know of no other state in the union where dormitory-type cells are prohibited, and as long as that's in the Clary settlement, we won't be able to ever construct that type of facility here in Alaska, which may or may not be a good idea, but currently our hands are tied to do it. So that's an example of some of the types of issues that can come up in this particular area. I have drafted a letter of intent based on all the hearings that we've been through in the House and the Senate now to this point that I would like the committee to consider when we get to that point. I believe it's now very clear as to exactly what's intended by this legislation. There's another important aspect of this legislation. Article 1, Section 12 of the Alaska Constitution, in addition to having the principle of reformation language, which is unique to our Constitution, does not appear in the federal Constitution, that has been the basis for some of these problems in prison administration, also contains our rights of victims section, which was recently adopted by the voters of the state. And as we know, until we clarify that the prisoners' rights are only those under the federal Constitution, the rights of victims segment to the Alaska State Constitution can be read to be modified by the prisoners' rights section, and it would, I believe, have a positive impact upon the implementation of the rights of victims segment also. One additional point I wanted to raise was to specifically take an examination of the Brandon case, which just occurred this summer, Mr. Chairman. In that case, the prisoner wanted to appeal his location in Arizona. The Department of Corrections sent the prisoner to Arizona. The prisoner didn't want to be in Arizona. Tried to bring a lawsuit based on the provision of the Constitution that this amendment would modify, the principle of reformation, saying that his reformation would be endangered since he wouldn't be able to be close to his family in Alaska if he was incarcerated in Arizona. The lower court said that's not an issue you can bring because it's not a constitutionally protected question. The Supreme Court said it did raise a constitutional question under the Alaska State Constitution and remanded to the lower court to reexamine the question and see if it was an appropriate location or to reexamine the question. The really important part of all this process was the dissent from former Chief Justice Rabinowitz in that case, in which the Chief Justice pointed out that he didn't believe the court was correct because the court had never before extended the principle of reformation to the issue of where somebody could be located in the state, what facility they could be located in. And if I could have the committee's leave to read just the last paragraph of his dissent. The last sentence, in fact, he says, he points out that he believes that now Prisoner visitation is a component of the constitutional right to rehabilitation, and it would seem that the Department of Corrections will necessarily encounter great difficulty in attempting to justify most out-of-state incarcerations, most incarcerations of rural Alaskans in urban facilities, and most incarcerations that encompass significant geographical dislocation, such as a Fairbanks resident being incarcerated at the facility in Seward. He goes on to say that the significant fiscal implications which flow from this implementation of this constitutional victims, this constitutional right of prisoner visitation, he points that there's going to be significant fiscal implications. That's the Chief Justice's opinion of what's going to logically result from this Brandon decision this summer from the Supreme Court, and that's the type of thing that SJR 3 is intended to preclude. We may be able to deal with the specific examples that we have right now where we have special rights for prisoners, but who knows where we're going to continue to go. And the Brandon case is an excellent example of how this problem could just get greater and greater and greater until we draw a line here. I think also this is consistent with the framers of our state constitution's intent. I believe that an examination of that time, I think Mr. Guinelli's pointed it out in prior testimony also, there was some discussion of whether this principle of reformation that's contained in Article 1, Section 12 would create an individual right. And at that time, there was a discussion that it would not create an individual right. And it was subsequently in the late 70s that the Alaska Supreme Court in the Abrams case, and then following again in the Ferguson case, I believe, has decided that this did create an individual right. The intent, as outlined in my draft letter of intent of Joint Resolution 3, would be to clarify, as the framers, I believe, intended, that that language contained in Article 1, Section 12 didn't create individual rights for prisoners, merely set up a guiding principle for how to administrate Alaska's prisons, and that's based on the principle of reformation, and that that would continue as a guiding principle, but it wouldn't still remain as an individual right for individual prisoners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As much as there were a lot of headlines and publicity about the no-frills prison bill last year, I can testify to the fact that this bill has a lot more bearing, a lot more influence, and a lot more importance to the department and to the future financial liabilities and responsibilities of the department, and hence us, than the no-frills bill ever contemplated. I speak specifically about the Brandon case, but additionally about the others. After I learned this summer that we had in fact lost the Brandon case, I began moving down the direction to try and recover what we had lost or clarify, and found this resolution was already there and signed on as a co-sponsor. You have to understand, Mr. Chairman, what's integral into the whole discussion, and that is that the court found that visitation is intrinsically tied to reformation. If that is in fact the case, if you cannot be reformed without having your family being around you, then imagine how far this goes. Inmate programs, Mr. Chairman, we don't have enough inmate programs for all our inmates. Inmate programs are extremely expensive, and we don't have enough of them for all. If an inmate makes application now to the court, says, you know, I want to participate in a program, but they don't have a job for me. Based on this decision, I'm certain we're going to lose hands down. And I have to tell you, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about a multi-million dollar problem that's just sitting right on the horizon unless we put some sideboards or parameters to what this discussion should be focused on. And my colleague from Anchorage, Senator Donnelly, great credit for taking on this issue. I believe that if you talk to the main population in Alaska, they support what this is trying to do.
They're not saying that we should beat up our inmates or we should return to the dark days of chain gangs. They are saying, however, that they are prisoners. And as such, they don't have the same rights as you and I. They're in a prison. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll close.
Representative Davies.
Are we debating the bill now? Or are we hearing this?
Well, actually, we have one other person here to signed up to testify. So if there are no further questions for the sponsor or questions on his testimony, then we'll have Mr. Guarnelli come up.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Guarnelli, in case he doesn't have anything prepared, Representative Davies, did you have a question?
I'd like to ask some questions.
It's okay if I stay here, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Force him to make a presentation.
For the record, my name is Dean Guarnelli with the Department of Law. I'm ready to submit to questioning, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davies, your question?
Well, I hope it's not quite as bad as that sounds. I just would like you to comment on the relationship of the proposed resolution here, the issue of the creation of a right, and perhaps you could clarify what impact this may or may not have on the Cleary situation specifically.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to keep my comments fairly brief. What Senator Donnelly said about the Alaska Constitutional Convention was accurate. I mean, they viewed this particular provision about principle of reformation to be guidelines, goals, essentially. That they wanted to establish in the Constitution. In other words, and I think the specific language, as someone said, was something very similar to what Representative Mulder just said, and we shouldn't go back to the bread and water days. We ought to have some guiding principle in our Constitution that we provide some means of rehabilitation. I think from that then, 20 years later, the Supreme Court created a right to rehabilitation, if you will, that was enforceable in court. In other words, a prisoner could sue the state claiming that he wasn't getting the right kind of program. I believe that this amendment would change that process. I think it particularly in light of Senator Donnelly's letter of intent, it would take it back to a guiding principle and not an enforceable right. At least that would be the senator's intent and that way it would be interpreted. Whether that's absolutely the way it would be interpreted, I'm not here to guarantee that. I think I've got to say that despite all of the opinions that the Alaska Supreme Court has issued about right to rehabilitation, and some prisoners have actually filed lawsuits, I think the impact on the department from those lawsuits has really been negligible. In other words, the courts give the department fairly broad deference in choosing what kinds of programs to give prisoners, choosing when to give prisoners those programs, and as long as there's, as long as they've got something, the courts are pretty much going to say, hands off. So, despite some of those opinions, I think, as a practical matter, as long as this committee and the legislature is going to fund the department for having programs, we really don't have all that much of a problem in terms of litigation under this section. I think the department's real fear is that once we take away or undercut the right to rehabilitation, that there may be movements to take away some of the money for prison programs, and they are really very fearful of that because it's a good prison management tool. Having said that, in terms of the Cleary settlement, There are grounds under which the state could go in and ask the judge to relieve us from the Cleary order. It would be a discretionary act on the part of the judge, and the judge wouldn't be required to do it. I don't believe that this particular amendment creates a terribly strong ground for being relieved from judgment, because as Senator Donnelly said, it's not clear in the Cleary settlement, you know, what the basis of it was. In fact, although the prisoners who sued, the class of prisoners who sued, alleged that there were violations of the federal constitution, violation of the state constitution, there never has been any finding that the state was in violation of the constitution, and we didn't concede that in entering into this agreement. So we're essentially saying we weren't violating the constitution, and to go to the judge and say, well, now the constitution has changed, let us out of this, in my mind, does not present a compelling reason to, you know, to relieve us from judgment. I think the other aspect is more of a tactical one as well. I don't think the state is really in a very good position, having been in contempt of that order for the last 3 years, to now go in and say, well, let us out of it. So the state's intent all along, and before we got in contempt, we were on the road to getting out from under court supervision, was to establish a pattern of compliance with the order, and once we establish a compliance with the order, some of the past comments of the court indicated that there was a willingness to let us out from court supervision. We think that's the best way to achieve that. In any event, that's a sort of a long answer to a short question.
Certainly, though, Mr. Grinnelli, passage of this doesn't hurt the state's chances of coming into compliance or even surviving some future suit on the same things.
It would. That's correct. It would not.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. One minor clarification, I think, and then an amplification, if you would. The prisoners also allege that the state statutes were being violated in addition to the constitutional and federal rights. Isn't that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
And then could you amplify just a little bit on how the department uses this as a management tool?
How the department uses
what uses reformation?
Mr. Chairman, I think that the department views prison programs, education, work programs, counseling programs, that sort of thing, as a management tool, because they keep the prisoners occupied. They give them something to do. They give them something to look forward to. I don't think there's enough other things to do in the facilities to keep them occupied if they didn't have these programs available. And I think the phrase is idle hands are the devil's playthings. And I think it's particularly true in prisons. And so it's a matter of keeping the prisoners busy, keeping them occupied, giving them some goals to work towards finishing these programs that they believe is a good management tool.
Clarification on that, just keeping them busy keeps them out of trouble, perhaps. But right now, the department is precluded from saying we're going to withhold those rights or those activities from you because of misbehavior, because Cleary guarantees them the access to those things, doesn't it?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain that the specific example you gave is.
You certainly, if somebody acts up to a point that they have to be segregated.
As I said, I think the courts have been giving the department wide deference in deciding when they give programs, under what conditions, and if a prisoner misbehaves and has to be put in administrative segregation, that's a good reason for, you know, not making a particular program available. Now, on the other hand, there are some particular prisoners who, for perhaps no fault of their own, have to be in segregation all the time, and I think the department has some obligation to extend something to them. But again, it's a matter of discretion in the department that, by and large, the courts have not imposed upon the department in the specifics of it. I think they want to see that there's something there available, but as far as the specifics of it, we haven't had problems with that.
Representative Davies, did you have a follow-up question?
One follow-up on that. And then beyond the use of this as a management tool, does the department believe that it has any efficacy in terms of recidivism rates?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the department has done a study with respect to its sex offender program. I'm not aware that it's done extensive studies of recidivism rates with other programs. I know the parole board has done some studies with respect to following people that they have paroled to see if they're making good decisions. But I'd like those questions answered by the department if I could defer to them.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Mr. Grinnelli or the sponsor? If not, we have one proposed. Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to emphasize the point that SGR 3 doesn't preclude any rehabilitation programs. It simply says they'd no longer be a constitutional individual right of prisoners. The legislature and the Department of Corrections could still provide all the programs they want to do. It's just it wouldn't be an individual right of individual prisoners anymore. And I certainly support those kind of programs. I think they're very meritorious, and we should be doing educational and rehabilitation programs for the facilities. But I also think it ought to be the policy decision of the legislature and the Department of Corrections of how they provide those and not an individual right of prisoners. As to the Clary impact, I think Mr. Guinelli is correct, but I have been looking for a way to revisit Clary for 10 years now, or ever since I've been here virtually, and this is the best I could come up with so far to at least give us an argument to get back in there. As you read the Clary settlement, you'll find something about three times in there it says you can't appeal this or can't change this and unless there's some event occurs to justify that. And while this may certainly, I'm not certainly in trying to guarantee to this committee that this would be the event, it would certainly allow us to try.
Representative Mulder.
Mr. Chairman, is the letter of intent, I want to clarify, the letter of intent is not currently attached to the resolution, is that correct?
No. It'd be a new letter of intent by this committee.
Was it considered by previous committees?
It hasn't been directly considered by previous committees because in previous committees we had gone down a road that was a little different. We thought we'd address specifically in the language of the amendment this issue of that it specifically applied to the principal reformation, that it specifically wanted to make it into a guiding principle versus the present interpretation by the state Supreme Court. But frankly, in Judiciary Committee, the House Judiciary Committee concluded that this language was preferable because it's much cleaner. It says what it says. And by having a subsequent letter of intent, which the most important thing through this process is not so much the letter of intent, but what the ballot proposition says. The description in the ballot document that the voters rely on when they vote yes or no on this, when this is before them. That's the most important thing. And I really see the letter of intent as a guideline for that ballot statement, because that's what the state Supreme Court will look at in interpreting this language. In addition to the actual language itself.
Well, Senator Donnelly, then, I mean, if the decision was made to do that, I guess I have some questions about the wordiness of what still is here before us. I mean, you've got there, including the principles of reformation. Well, you make reference to notwithstanding Section 12, and the principles of reformation is part of Section 12. So I'm wondering why you have to spell that out specifically.
Mr. Chairman, could I see what you're looking at there?
I was looking at the House CS, the Judiciary House CS. On line 8, basically, in between the commas there, it says, including the principle of reformation. And I'm wondering why that has to be spelled out specifically.
He's in the doctor's version.
Mr. Chairman, I have to admit I'm rather surprised by what's been published as the Judiciary Committee's version, and I need to go back and talk to the Judiciary Committee chair and their staff, because my understanding from my attendance at the meeting was they chose not to adopt this particular language. So it's possible either I misunderstood the intent of the committee, or that the clerk of the committee, because they had this before them as a committee substitute, and then they decided not to do it, is my understanding. So I need to double check with them and make sure that this is what they really wanted to do.
Okay. Well, this is
because after that meeting, I was just working from the original document, because the committee's intent, my understanding of the committee's intent and what happened at the meeting, and I was there for the whole meeting, was that they didn't adopt this final language here.
Okay. Well, this happened once before, that the wrong language was reported out of the committee. So perhaps what we should do is just end the hearing for today. We do have this noticed again on Friday.
Okay.
Let's clarify, make sure we have the right document in front of us, so that we're not amending a piece of paper that's not properly before us.
Thank you.
Friday, tomorrow, yes. So with that, I guess, if there are no other questions, we will end the hearing for today.
Introduce. Oh, so I know this is very